Jam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. And here we are. We are making radio great again. And never shying away from getting to the heart of the issues that face us. Now, you know, it's funny because yesterday, I was thinking, I've got to, after the show, I wanted to kind of start to think about what I was going to talk about the next day, and we did our promo, and I really wanted to tackle this there's been a number of terrorist attacks that we just don't have time here to cover everything that's going on. There's just so little time and so much going on in the world. And I wanted to, I was really touched this last Sunday, of course, by these twin suicide bombings that happened in Egypt. And if you haven't been following this, about 50 people died in two separate attacks on Coptic Christian churches in the city of Tanta and also Alexandria. The church in Alexandria that was hit is actually the Coptic Christian Cathedral. Now, the Coptic Christians go back in time in Egypt to basically the foundations of Christianity to the Catholic Church. They have been there forever, okay? And you probably don't realize it, but you probably know a Coptic Christian. If you live in Orange County, LA County, my dentist is a Coptic Christian. I mean, you got a lot of Egyptians here. Many of the Egyptians that live here are from that minority. And the reason they're here is because life back in Egypt is not so dandy for them. I think there's now something around maybe 5% left in the country. It's not, they're persecuted. But they're still a strong and vibrant community. Now, these attacks, of course, ISIS claimed responsibility, and there's been a wide outcry across the world. And I always want to scan. I want to see what people's reactions are, and especially what reactions are in the so-called moderate Muslim world, because we're taught that, you know, the conventional thinking about this stuff. And this is what I always like to look at. Whenever there's a conventional thought, whenever there is some sort of foregone conclusion that the media makes or that political thinkers make, my natural instinct is to challenge it. And one of the things that always fascinates me is the quick conclusion that this is the work of radicals. And that's kind of what we, you know, heard across the board. In fact, now, I looked at today, finally, the CARE, which is the Council on American Islamic Relations, and one of the big groups that represents Muslims in the U.S., they put out a statement today condemning the attack. Actually, late last night. I didn't see it until this morning. So it took them a few days, and they did put up a statement and saying that there's a, you know, this kind of extremism cannot be tolerated. And I look at it and I go, look, by the way, a lot of Muslims around the world. There's about 1.6, 1.7 billion Muslims all around the world. And the number of extremist terrorists, it's such a small number. It's negligible. So the question is what is it that leads to this? And why, what is the source of the extremism? And I look at Egypt, and I look at this group that's been so heavily persecuted and now the victims of this terrible attack by ISIS. And I'm looking at Egypt as one example of it. And one thing that I was reminded of is, you know, President Sisi, he was here last week. He met with Trump. He's the president of Egypt. And he, about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, he actually gave a really powerful speech at Al-Azhar University. Now, Al-Azhar University is in Cairo, Egypt, and it is considered the epicenter of Islamic thought, of Islamic studies. It is, you would almost call, it's like the Brigham Young University, the BYU of the Muslim world, if you will. So he goes there, and he goes to the university, and I'll remind you, El-Sisi is a moderate. He is exactly, this is the kind of, this guy is a moderate. He's the one who replaced the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, when he was head of the military, he's the one who kicked the Muslim Brotherhood out, was later elected president in 2014. And he gave this, I mean, just the most stunningly direct speech to these clerics that are at the university. And in it, he said, and I'm going to quote him, "The corpus of Islamic texts and ideas that we have sacralized over the centuries, right, that we've studied, that we've made sacred, that we worship, are," and this is his quote, "are antagonizing the entire world. And it is not possible," it's a direct quote from the president of Egypt, "it's not possible that 1.6 billion people should want to kill the rest of the world's inhabitants so that they themselves may live." Now, he's speaking to the clerics. He's speaking to the wise men, and many of them, by the way, many of these guys are big-time extremists. And he's telling them, he's begging them, "You've got to moderate. You've got to chill. You've got to let go of this." And it strikes me as, it's so admirable, by the way, you take any religion, right? And you take a strong ideology. And if the corpus of that ideology runs away into the extreme, how do you get it back? How do you bring that back? How do you rein it in? And the issue here that no one wants to talk about because they're too afraid, or because it's not politically correct, or nobody wants to get, you know, accused of demonizing a religion, is that the crazy, right, the extremists, right, are not, it's not just the people that are blowing themselves up and shooting guns and joining ISIS. Those people are supported, if you will, by a larger, still small, but larger group of people behind them that advocate the ideology, that are taking the patently absurd that all moderate Muslims and normal people look at and go, "This is crazy. I don't believe this." And they're preaching it. They're writing about it. They're practicing it. And they're fomenting this crazy ideology. And if you think, by the way, Pew Research, this is gold standard stuff, right? These governments rely on Pew to do opinion surveys throughout the world. And Pew, back in 2007, did a really in-depth study in Europe and also in a variety of other predominantly Muslim countries on suicide bombing and opinions, Muslim opinions, okay, of suicide bombing and whether or not it was an appropriate way, okay, to target civilians, an appropriate way to target, if it's okay to target civilians in the defense of Islam. And you know, in France, right, France is a liberal country. It's a great place where the revolution, right, where they overthrew a king. They gave voting rights to women. Liberal country. You know that 35% of Muslims in France, as of 2007, according to Pew, think that, you know, suicide bombing, harming civilian targets, can be okay in the defense of Islam? That's a stunning number. That's not a 1% number. That's not a 0.5% number. That's 35%. And whose responsibility is it? Whose responsibility is it to counter this? Well, we as Westerners have abdicated any responsibility for this. We have. And that's part of the problem. Because, you know, in our world, okay, the world I live in, at least, now I'm not a religious person, but I think that you have the right to practice any religion that you see fit, however you want to do it, as long as it doesn't harm other people. And that's our philosophy, certainly in this country. We come from this, you know, that's why the pilgrims came here. They wanted to practice their religion freely. And that concept is enshrined in our Constitution. And it's created a culture, though, where we're afraid unwilling to challenge religious doctrines when they're absolutely crazy. Now, the fact of the matter is, and it doesn't break it down here, and it would be interesting to see what, you know, these percentages probably shrink when you're talking about Muslims that have been in France for generations versus Muslims that have come fresh from the Muslim world. Now, if you think I'm, by the way, I have a reason to suspect that, because when you look at numbers, for example, in Egypt, when I'm talking about El-Sisi and him going to Al-Azhar University and saying, hey, clerics, time to moderate. We can't be this antagonistic toward non-believers. We're tearing our country apart. In fact, we're tearing our Muslim world apart. So when he says that at Al-Azhar, what are the percentages there? Do you know what the percentage is in Egypt? Think that, you know, attacks on civilians as part of a defense of Islam is okay in some circumstances? 53%. When you see those church bombings happen, and believe me, we're pretty detached from it, right? We look at watch CNN or Fox or whatever, and it's devastating and it hurts, and our sympathies go out to the victims, but look at that. 50, as in 2007, Pew found, this is apples to apples, right? Back to the France statistics. In Egypt, 53%. In Jordan, 57%. In a country like Nigeria, 69%. There has to be an honest discussion about this, and no one's doing it. And it's because people are afraid. People don't want to be called bigots. They don't want to be called Islamophobes. They don't want to be called names. And this is a broader discussion that is bigger than just Islam and terrorism. And the bigger discussion is that the greatest asset we have as a free society is free speech. Any efforts, whether by state or by cultural convention, to stifle or to limit free expression is catastrophic, because how does our society evolve? How do we get better? How do we change? You know, how did we as a country decide, you know, hey, maybe slavery is not a good idea, and hey, we should give voting rights to women, and hey, you know, we really should integrate our schools. You know how all those things started? You know how that kind of change happened? Change for the better, because we were allowed to express those opinions. And the thing that terrifies me, literally terrifies me to my core, is not Islamic terrorism or any other ideology, really, per se. It's political correctness as a whole. It terrifies me because it is a backdoor to limiting our free speech. It is a little way that the left has been able to mute certain opinions. Now, let an opinion, this is what I think, let opinions fail in the marketplace of ideas. Let bad ideas get shot down. But do not prevent people from saying and challenging certain status quo accepted foregone conclusions. So when we throw out these labels, see, this isn't very nice to talk about. People don't like to talk about this stuff. People get very uncomfortable. But it is a problem. And you know what? There are many, many moderate Muslims who know it's a problem, have identified it as a problem, and are bravely fighting the fight. I talk about Al-Azhar. I mean, this is a university, by the way, that, what was it, back in 2015, said ISIS are not heretics to Islam, and said that many of the fighters that fight for ISIS are in fact honorable. Why? Because they're Muslims. That's their thinking. It's absurd. I'm not speaking for the religion, but I'm just giving you an example. that the keepers of the faith, that there is a challenge that needs to be made, and it's happening, and the moderates are speaking up. And it's insane that we as a country, as we as this crucible of democracy, of free speech rights, are tiptoeing around this issue so delicately. Everywhere I look on the news, nowhere is anybody really talking about this. A few people are. I'm going to give you some clips, including from Bill Maher, who is one of the people that is just, I can't believe I actually agree with Bill Maher on something. How about that? Okay. Back right after this, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Rzhovsky here, providing you with trailblazing analysis, always steps ahead of the mainstream chatter. And today, I think, there's no exception to the rule. 800-222-5222, 800-222-KABC, if you want to be on the program. Speaking about Islam, radical Islam, attitudes within the Muslim community toward radical Islam, and of course, this is not a topic for the faint-hearted. So if you are liable to be offended, if you are delicate in your sensibilities and sensitivities, if you are politically correct to a fault, tune out. Now, I was explaining how quite admirably, President Sisi, right as soon as he became, shortly, about 6 months after he became president of Egypt, he went to Al-Azhar University and delivered a pretty bold speech to the clerics there. And Al-Azhar University is sort of the, I called it the BYU of the Muslim world. You know, it could be the Vatican, too, of the Muslim world. And, well, anyway, you want to hear a clip of what he said here? Now, I'm not giving you audio clips because the speech was in Arabic, but I have the translation here in my hands, and I'm going to read a portion of this to you. So he was talking to the clerics there, and he's addressing these imams and scholars, and he says, "I am saying these words here at Al-Azhar before this assembly of scholars. And this is what I'm telling you. You cannot feel, you cannot remain trapped within this mindset. You need to step outside of yourselves to be able to observe it and reflect on it from a more enlightened perspective." Now, listen to this. I say, this is the president of Egypt speaking. I say and repeat again that we are in need of a religious revolution. A religious revolution. You imams are responsible before Allah. The entire world, I say it again, the entire world is waiting for your next move because this world of ours is being destroyed. It's being lost, and it's being lost by our own hands. This is exactly the type of leadership that I'm talking about that is needed. I mean, this is the voice of moderation. And you know what? See, he's not getting up there and saying, "Hey, guys, I realize that there's some people that are misconstruing our otherwise very peaceful religion." It's not what he's saying. He's saying that this religion maybe isn't that peaceful. We got to kind of, it's time for a religious revolution. We got to ditch some of this crazy stuff in our religion and moderate. And this is what nobody here is willing to say. Because everywhere that you tune into the news, right? Tell me, what do you hear on the news? What do you hear from the pontificators and the blowhards on TV and radio? You hear the same tired cliche, which is, Yes, it's the radicals. It's the radicals' radicals, and they've bastardized the religion. They've run away with it. It's not necessarily true. But there are many honest and brave people within the community who are fighting back. And I'm going to make one more very important point here. You know what we can do politically about this? For one, we can support the moderates in the world. We can support the moderate regimes in the world. Remember when Obama was providing help to the Muslim Brotherhood? Those people were legitimately crazy. The best thing that happened to Egypt was when Sisi kicked them out, ran them over, basically, took charge, and is fighting to win back and bring moderation to a very important strategic partner of ours. This is so crucial. Politics matter. Elections matter. They have consequences. All right. More on this when we come back. I'm going to play you that Bill Maritz. Good stuff. Got some great clips for you. John Wolf is up next with the news.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sam Murjovsky here. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Thank you. We're back. And now addressing some sad news, of course, on Palm Sunday, just this past weekend, two churches in Egypt were bombed, both Coptic Christian churches. Lots of people died. Tragic loss of life. And now we're talking again about radical Islam. And one of the things that caught my eye as I was looking into all of this is Egypt's president and his very brave speech that he gave about 2 years ago at Al-Azhar University in Cairo. And in the speech, I mean, he flat out, and I shared some bits of it last segment, and it flat out told the clerics at Al-Azhar University, hey, you gotta kill the crazy in the religion. It's time for a religious revolution. We have to moderate. And in fact, if you understand what he's saying he's telling them that it's the religion that's tearing the world apart. It's the religion that's antagonizing the world, right? That's one of the things he said. We can't keep antagonizing the world. And this reminded me, of course, just for fun here. Do you remember? This is the same university that our president, Obama, went to in 2009, and he delivered that apologetic speech. Here's a clip of what he said. Listen carefully. This is Obama in Cairo talking about tolerance and Islam. Listen carefully.
Islam has a proud tradition of tolerance. We see it in the history of Andalusia and Cordoba. During the Inquisition, I saw it firsthand as a child in Indonesia, where devout Christians worshiped freely in an overwhelmingly Muslim country. That is the spirit we need today. People in every country should be free to choose and live their faith based upon the persuasion of the mind and the heart and the soul.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that last part. But in fact, so do you see the stark contrast when you take what President Sisi was saying, where he says, this is President Sisi's speech, the Egyptian president, a Muslim himself, says, we have to think hard about what we are facing. It's inconceivable that the thinking that we hold most sacred, meaning a religion, right, their faith, should cause the entire Islamic world to be a source of anxiety, of danger, of killing, and destruction. The thinking, right? The religion itself. And by the way, Obama, when he said in this clip about his time being in Indonesia as a child, Remember that poll, the Pew Research poll that I cited in 2007, Pew Research poll went around the world to gauge Muslim attitudes of practicing Muslims on the issue of suicide bombings and whether that and other forms of violence against civilian targets to defend Islam could be justified. You know what they? You know what percentage thought that it could be justified in Indonesia, country that Obama's mentioning here? 28%. 28%. Now it's frightening. It's not an insignificant number. It's not a small number. It's more. It's almost a third. And so that's an important, we have to talk about that. We have to understand that there isn't just a 0.1% of crazies that go out and blow themselves up and take human life with them. But there is a significant number behind them that have these type of hugely illiberal and inconsistent beliefs with ours. And the first step to all of it is being able to talk about it, being able to address it. And we haven't done it because it's what? Well, it's not politically correct or Islamophobic or whatever. And up next, I promised you Bill Maher. Here's what he says about it when we come back.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
Murjovsky here. We're back now. There was an interesting gal. We've talked about her before. Her name is Azra Namani. Now, she's Indian born, a liberal Muslim feminist activist. Let me tell you that one more time in case you missed it. A liberal Muslim feminist activist. Now, I've talked to you guys about her before because this is the lady who had secretly voted for Trump. You remember this? She voted for Trump, didn't tell anybody, and then wrote a really great article about how, because she's a journalist too, by the way, and worked in Pakistan, knew Danny Pearl, who of course himself was abducted by terrorists and murdered. But, you know, she wrote that piece about Trump and we discussed her before. So that, just to give you a little background on her. Now, she was on Bill Maher a little while back talking about her experience in Pakistan, where she worked as a journalist and she, in fact, fell in love with a guy, got knocked up. She got pregnant. And now, believe it or not, by the way, when that happens to a woman in Pakistan, it could potentially be a crime, right? Because this is sex out of wedlock. And that's how babies are made. I don't want to, I hope I'm not shocking anybody here. So at any rate, she's talking about this to Bill Maher and she's saying, hey, I was terrified to tell my parents. You know, my dad's the patriarch of the family and my parents are very Muslim and, very traditional. And so my mom took my dad out to dinner, which she's never done before. And she says to him, she tells him what happened and she gets an email. She's an email the next day from her dad, and she's dreading opening this up, right? And she clicks on it, opens up the email, and basically the gist of it, her dad says, Allah is merciful because he's a moderate. And he's not going to have his daughter stoned or, whatever. And he's like, hey, I love you, right? So here's her at the tail end of her saying this to Bill Maher, and Bill Maher saying, yeah, sure, there are many moderate voices in the community.
I don't think any of us who criticize Islam right. are denying that that element is there.
Yeah.
It's just not right now ascendant. No. It doesn't seem to be where the energy is.
Yeah.
So when I get accused of demonizing Islam, Nicholas Kristof, who I consider a friend, was on our show. We had a big debate about this last year. I saw him recently said, Bill Maher demonizes Islam because a small percentage of the faith are extremist. First of all, I'm not demonizing, I'm characterizing.
Right.
How did we get to this place where just describing something is demonizing? And I'm not so sure it's a very small percentage. Maybe a small percentage who carry out terrorist acts, but it's not a small percentage, right, who believe in some of the illiberal ideas that support
right.
terrorists.
Right.
And that's exactly my point. Now, it's interesting to note, because I think that there are two components to what I'm trying to explain. The two takeaways here. One, there's a problem within Islam. And it's not just about that 0.5% that carry out terrorist attacks. It's the silent group there. There's a certain number of them that believe crazy things and support some of these extremist acts. But the other part of it, the bigger part of it, is the idea that we can't talk about it. That somebody brings this up and says what I'm saying and is immediately, you know, well, I'm going to hear it. I'm going to hear it tonight. Trust me. I'm going to hear it tomorrow. But it's okay. I can take it. Now, Bill Maher, okay? Now, he's a liberal guy, right? And that what he's talking about, that friend of his, the amount of flack that he got from the left when he got into this. I mean, he got friendly fire. That's what happened to him. It's funny, all the reactions to this. I remember I was tracking it because I was curious to see what would happen to one of their own. And this is it. Liberals will turn on their own people when they don't like it. This is the power of political correctness. They'll literally eat their own. And you got to support the moderates. That's what this is all about. And I even mean moderate liberals, too, you know. That's the same group that needs protecting. All right, we'll be back right after this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky here. I was talking to Sweet James about a guy that called him about 4 months ago. And the insurance company offered him $200. Got into an accident. He calls them. He tries to do it on his own. Gets $200 offered to him. And the guy goes, you know, this just doesn't sound right. I think I need a second opinion. And had heard about Sweet James on the radio and had called him. And liked what he heard, signed up, and now is settling his case for $100,000. Now, I bring this up because the insurance company will never give you what you deserve. They will try to buy you off cheap. Now, results vary, obviously. You know, not everybody gets $100,000. Some people have bigger cases, smaller cases. But the point being is the insurance company will always want to pay you little to nothing. You will not get what you deserve if you try doing this on your own, talking to them directly, regardless of what type of accident has happened to you. Trust me. What you need to do, it's simple. You got to call Sweet James. No recovery, no fee. It doesn't cost you anything until he gets you an outcome, when he gets you a settlement. No recovery, no fee. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. Now, speaking of injuries, okay, play the clip. Tell me if you recognize what's going on here. Now, this, of course, is the audio here of the guy that was dragged off that United Airlines flight. And the world there's an uproar, right? I mean, this is nobody liked what they saw. His mouth was bloodied. I think he had three or four cops taking him off the plane. And I'll tell you, I'll explain. I have some thoughts on this that I think are relevant. two things. One, the reason he was removed from the plane was because the airline needed to send some of its employees to Louisville, to the place where the plane was taking off from. They had probably another connecting flight. They had a flight that they needed to do. Four people. There had to have been a better way to get those four people there. But the greater issue struck me, and I heard so many commentators, including Dana Perino, conservative commentator on Fox News. I don't have the clip, but she said something that I found totally jarring. This was yesterday, I think on the 5. She says, and this is the one time you're going to hear me say this because I don't like government or anything, but I think that the government really needs to do something about these airlines and overbooking. And I was slack-jawed. My mouth just dropped. Let me tell you what this is all about. United has lost $1.4 billion in market cap. This incident has cost them a bunch of money. Their stock is tanking. And that, by the way, what is that? That is the market punishing them for being idiots. See, businesses are responsible to their customers. It's not about regulation. What happened here was, I looked at the law. This is what they did was perfectly legal. You can change the law, I guess, like Dana Perino wants, and every Democrat is baying for, punish the airlines, punish them. But that's not what we conservatives do. That's not the common sense thing here is if an airline continues to do stupid stuff like this, they're going to lose business. The marketplace will punish them. The free market is what takes care of all these problems that, by the way, government, when you turn to government for solutions, all hell breaks loose. Trust me. All right, we're out of time, but that's my 10 cents on that issue. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, 7 p.m. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Can't stop, addicted to the shindig. Chop, chop, it says I'm gonna win big. Choose not to life of imitation. Distant,
Talk Radio, 790
KABC.